Are you trying to eat more plant-based meals these days? Well, then you'll want to stay tuned because we have a treat for you. We will talk with cookbook author Molly Katzen this hour, who is credited with bringing vegetarian cooking into the mainstream some 40 years ago with her Moosewood cookbook. And now she has a new cookbook out. It's The Heart of the Plate, Vegetarian Recipes for a New Generation. I'm Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And I have been a vegetarian, or mostly a vegetarian, for many, many years now. I do eat fish once in a while. But Molly's Moosewood cookbook was the first cookbook I bought when I decided to become a vegetarian. So I'm really looking forward to this hour, and I hope you are too, and I hope you will join in with your questions. I hope you will maybe join in with some of your favorite vegetarian recipes. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Molly Katzen is the best-selling author of the classic Moosewood Cookbook, and her latest book is The Heart of the Plate, Vegetarian Recipes for a New Generation. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, what a pleasure, Joy. Thanks for inviting me.
It really, I didn't buy the book 40 years ago, but it really was credited with sort of popularizing vegetarian cooking and bringing vegetarian cooking into the mainstream. Are you a vegetarian?
Well, it depends on how you define it. One of the things I talk about a lot is what does it mean to be a vegetarian? And if you are defining that as somebody who just really the basis of their food decisions is that they don't want to include meat and everything is organized around not including meat, no, I'm not that kind of vegetarian because I'm more of what I like to call, and this is a little bit of a mouthful, but I like to call myself a plant-forward omnivore. Because my vegetarianism, if I have it, is more about loving vegetables and wanting really just every dinner plate I ever have to be just so filled with vegetables that there's very little room for anything else. But I'm not against meat. I just want a lot of vegetables. But I also meet self-described vegetarians who just plain care about whether there's meat on their plate, as in keep the meat off my plate, and the rest of it just whatever it is. So I don't know how to answer that question anymore because there are so many people who love vegetarian food and want it most of the time, but it's not a statement about meat one way or the other.
Right, and you are making the vegetables the heart of the plate. Is that the reason for the title?
Yes. Well, the heart of the plate actually is the name of one of the sort of help yourself stations at Harvard. Well, now it's at several different locations in Harvard where I've been a consultant to the dining services for a number of years. And it's a modular approach to the plate where we take the idea of this big entree that dominates the center with, you know, incidental sides. So the vegetables in that model are almost always the incidental side. And the big thing in the middle is almost always meat. Or if, you know, in the older vegetarian model, that big thing in the center might be a vegetarian casserole. But nevertheless, it's like one dominating, you know, main dish and some incidentals on the side. The heart of the plate that I enjoy is a kind of moving target. It's a kind of design where there are several little dishes that instead of one big one, there's a collaboration of complementary smaller ones. And it makes the plate a lot more colorful and a lot more playful.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hearing listeners starting to say, well, but it's more work, isn't it? Like, nice idea, but who has the time? It's actually not a lot more work. It might require a bit more counter space, but it's not really more work.
And part of the title of your book is Vegetarian Recipes for the New Generation. Who is the audience for the book, and why do vegetarian recipes need an update?
Good question. So it's Vegetarian Recipes for a New Generation, and that has several meanings for me. And one of them is, the most obvious literal one, that the new generation coming up, which includes my own kids and my nieces and nephews and all their friends, I'm finding they have quite an open, curious attitude and a very loving attitude towards food. They're not necessarily the ones, at least that I know, are very open to eating a lot of vegetables, to cooking in new ways, like, of course, watch a lot of food on television. That I don't know how that affects it one way or the other. So it's for that. It's also for, I see the new generation as a regeneration, of even of us older people, that is a kind of a renewed and refreshed way of looking at food. But personally, for me, it reflects a new generation of my own cooking style, because I cook really differently from how I did when I wrote the Moosewood Cookbook 40 years ago, even though I have to tell you, I still do make recipes from the Moosewood Cookbook, from the original Moosewood Cookbook. But my general cooking style has quite changed, so it's a rebirth for me as well.
How has your cooking style changed?
Well, the short version is olive oil. The longer version is, to explain that olive oil, that's not the whole picture, but mm-hmm. it's my two-word answer. People who are familiar with the oldest editions of the Moosewood Cookbook probably didn't see much olive oil in there because there wasn't much, if any. If you think back in terms of what we had in our grocery stores at the time, it was a very different landscape of food options and ingredient options when I first started out. And a good Italian olive oil or a good Spanish or Greek olive oil, those bottles didn't exist in this country at the time. It was either butter or some kind of nondescript oil, just generic oil, that we'd cook our food in. And so that's one example. My earlier vegetarian cooking was all about the structure of some dish on its way to hopefully being as substantial as possible. When I say structure, it's like the eggs went in, the cheddar cheese went in, the milk went in, all the custardy type ingredients were kind of my, that was how I built my food then. Very rich, and very much hoping to convince people that they could live if they didn't have meat on their plate even one night a week. I was thinking of my friends' mothers. My friends who'd gone off to college and come back vegetarian. Oh, what will their poor mothers serve them for dinner? How about a nice big cheesy casserole? You know, mm-hmm. But that casserole in my early days might or might not have had vegetables in it. It was really, again, all about trying to be structural and substantial. Now I start with the vegetable. My vegetarian cooking has been inching over the years more and more in the direction of the actual vegetable. And it's more like the vegetable exposed, you know, just a roasted asparagus, big, thick, you know, roasted asparagus spear or a plate of them with some whole grains that are fluffy and might have some nuts and some, just some, you know, shaved carrot or something for color. It's a lighter, far more veg, I call it veg-centric cuisine than it used to be.
And you say the recipes are more relaxed than some of your past cooking. How is it more relaxed?
I give a range of seasoning. I give people these little mini continua within the recipe so they can start with a certain amount of an herb or a certain amount of salt or a certain amount of garlic and give it a taste. It's kind of almost like cooking lessons. And then I say, you know, this is how much I put in. You can put in your own, and then at the your own amount to your own taste. And at the end of most of the recipes in this book, I have a little section. It's separated geographically on the page from the main ingredients. It's kind of like extras, and I call it optional enhancements. And that's where I give many suggestions for ways that my recipe can be changed, altered, augmented, and very much encouraging whoever is making the dish to make it their own, to get to stamp their signature on it. And so it's relaxed because, among other things, it's flexible, and I really want the reader to adopt these recipes and then call it their own, you know, change it, own it. Once you make it, I say to people in the book, once you make this recipe, it's your recipe. It's no longer my recipe. It's another way for me to just, you know, hand it over to the person cooking it.
Well, while you said that you're not a vegetarian as much as you are a plant forward omnivore.
Why doesn't roll off the tongue exactly?
Yeah. Why did you decide to focus on vegetarian cooking, not only with this cookbook, The Heart of the Plate, but with the Moosewood Cookbook
and with pretty much all my cookbooks in between? Well, for me personally, I just always thought that alternative food to meat was to me the comfort food and the more interesting food. I grew up in a kosher home in which the meat and milk were separate. So it wasn't all mixed together. There were meat nights and there were what we called dairy nights. So I already had in my mind a division where some meals have meat, most of them, but not all. And when the meat is missing, other things appear on the plate, things that don't on the table, things that don't normally appear. It's like the alternative. I always had a sense of alternative to meat. And once a week in our house when I was a kid, we had what we called dairy night. And it's kind of fun to look back and realize how many dishes my mother put on the table those nights, because there was still that notion that if the meat came off, like 40 things had to come back on the table to compensate. It was a kind of hope is enough mentality. So on those nights, we had like this kugel and then that kugel and scrambled eggs and this coleslaw and that coleslaw, not just one, but three. So many salads, many kugels, eggs, bread, and the other kind of bread and the cream cheese. It went on and on. And it's not so much that I loved every one of those foods, but I loved the concept that when the meat went away, all these interesting dishes appeared that only appeared when the meat wasn't there. So that was an early association. It was no aspersion on the meat. It was just that there was more room on the table for this other kind of cozy and interesting stuff. So that's how I started out. And then when I went away to college, the meat in dorms was not, it was not my mother's meat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for kosher kids, meat is guilty until proven innocent. So I didn't get any, it gives you a sense of standards about meat. So I just skipped it altogether. And then I found it after about a year. And the vegetable dishes at the school I went to Cornell, which is a wonderful ag school where they grew a lot of the vegetables, and it was fresh stuff I'd never seen. So the combination of the meat being not my mother's and the vegetables being very interesting, I kind of just fell in love with that kind of eating. And it went on for a while before I realized that I hadn't had any chicken all year, you know. But I was not one to ever make a decision. I never want to eat meat. I just sort of stopped. And I started again and stopped. I was in and out of it, but that was never the focal point. I just was crazy about the vegetables.
We are talking with Molly Katzen. She is a best-selling author of many cookbooks, the classic Moose Wood cookbook, also 11 other cookbooks in between, and her newest is The Heart of the Plate, Vegetarian Recipes for a New Generation. And we're welcoming your questions for her. We're welcoming your favorite vegetables, favorite vegetarian recipes. Do you struggle to add more vegetables to your diet? Are you trying to eat more plant-based meals? Did you also cook from the Moose Wood Cookbook like so many others? How is your cooking different today? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Molly Katzen about her latest cookbook, The Heart of the Plate, Vegetarian Recipes for a New Generation. And we are talking about vegetarian cooking, and we're welcoming your questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And Molly, I'm wondering if you want to maybe just share some of your personal favorites or a personal favorite from the book, from The Heart of the Plate.
Oh, let's see. There are so many. Sort of like, who's your favorite child?
Right.
I have an unusual chapter in this book that is very personal, so I think I'll go there. And it's a short one, so I can mention several of the recipes in here. There is a chapter called Cozy Mashes. I think that we all grew up, you know, sort of taking the food on our plate and smashing it with our fork. You know, when you're a little kid and you've got peas, they taste okay, especially if they're not from a can. Actually, they taste okay if they're not from a can. And I don't know how many of you remember being a little kid and going at the peas with the back of your fork and mashing them, but my brothers and I felt like that was the only way to eat peas. So I realized that as an adult, I was still wanting to mash things, but I didn't quite feel permitted because it wasn't good table manners. So I did my own little quick internal study of what does it mean to love mashed foods. There's something very comforting about it. So I went ahead and made an actual formal chapter called Cozy Mashes, in which I'm mashing all kinds of unexpected vegetables. I'm thinking, if you can mash potatoes, why not mash the other stuff? So that does actually include mashed peas. Maybe a little mint in there as an option. And mashed broccoli. So one of the things that's changed about my cooking is I used to think that the broccoli always had to be slightly al dente and crunchy. And now I go to the other end of the texture spectrum and cook the broccoli till it's soft and then puree it in the food processor. You know, for vegans, it could just be olive oil and salt and pepper. But for those who love dairy, as I do, just a touch of heavy cream goes in there. And I've mashed parsnips. Did I already say that? They're so delicious.
No, and what about cauliflower?
I have mashed cauliflower that has roasted garlic in it, and roasted garlic is on that long list of ingredients that I didn't know existed back when I did this food. So that's another big change in my cooking. And by the way, speaking of that little bit of cream that I just told you I put into the mashed broccoli, a big change in my cooking also has been that once upon a time I would have just been pouring that cream like with abandon. And now, and I would have probably put it in the recipe earlier and it would have, you know, spread out through the recipe as a very creamy backdrop. But now I'll add just a thread of heavy cream, if I add it at all, towards the end. So as a finishing, and with techniques for making a little bit of a very rich ingredient go a long way.
That sounds really good. Now, so your recipes in the Heart of the Plate are just healthier than they were.
They're simpler too, Joy. Yeah. I mean, you get to the essence a whole lot sooner. You don't sit. With some of them, I have to admit, with some of my older casseroles from way back, people would sit there for hours, like, what's in this thing? Because I was in the habit of thinking that as a younger cook, that the more stuff you could pile, cram into a casserole, the better. And I would actually, you know, go into the back corners of my kitchen cupboards looking for that old jar of you know, sunflower seeds, anything I could find to make the dish more complex. I had a kind of quantitative idea of complexity in food, like just dump as many things in as you can, and that equals complexity. But what I've learned is that complexity is in fact a subtle thing that has to do with layers of flavor and very particular attention to texture. But it can involve two ingredients. It's how you use the heat. It's how you pay attention when you're cooking. It is the quality of that olive oil you're using. And again, we didn't have olive oil when I did moussewood. It was just not available. Now that it is, that becomes a major ingredient. And also it becomes an important ingredient for health food. Now that, thank the Lord, we have recovered. We were all recovering from the low-fat debacle where, you know, fat was considered bad. Right. And fat was counted as, like, all fat was lumped together and counted as a number rather than looking at the qualities. Now that we've kind of recovered from that, we're in a position to make our food taste a whole lot better.
What I liked about the roasted cauliflower, and I actually got the idea from a local producer at a farmer's market. I bought this monster head of cauliflower, and I was thinking, what else can I do with this besides the typical cauliflower stuff?
Yeah, you know, cauliflower is coming up. I've heard it described as the new kale, which I find hilarious. First of all, I find it funny when something's the new something else. But you know how kale's been the in vegetable now. It's been the darling of vegetable cooks all over the country for a few years. And I just need to say for the record that I have been in love with kale for 20 years. And when I used to talk about it in the 90s, it was a laugh line. People like, oh gosh, kale, are you kidding? Well, hi, you guys. Kale is now a part of our vernacular. It's part of our dinner plate. And we move on to cauliflower. And you know what's cool about cauliflower, which I want people to know because we're also all thinking about keeping our eating economical. Just about every part of your cauliflower is edible, except for maybe the leaves. You can eat the leaves probably if you want to. I never have, and I don't vouch for them. But once you get those base leaves off and get that original slice off the base, you know, the very bottom of the plant, that you can discard, or better yet, compost. But all the rest of the cauliflower, all those, not just the florets, all those white stems, they're actually very pretty. That's all part of the cauliflower. Include all of it, and you'll get twice the volume.
Wow. Well, I'm gonna try your recipe for the mashed cauliflower. But it was a substitute. I did a recipe to make a substitute for mashed potatoes, and I thought, why didn't I think of that?
You know, it sort of reminds me a little bit, just a touch. Do you remember in the early days when we were making cakes and brownies out of carob?
Right.
And trying to pass it off as chocolate, and then everybody would hate you.
It didn't work,
yeah. That was the path to unpopularity. It's like, are you kidding me? You know, that was not a good idea. So I used to tell people, carob is fine, it's delicious, make a carob something or other, but please don't try to pass it off as chocolate. Anybody who loves chocolate will, A, not believe you for 1 second, and B, hate you, so don't do that. So the same thing with mashed potatoes and cauliflower, unless you want to combine them, and that's a whole other story, because they blend beautifully, or layer them.
Okay.
I love layering foods, so you can layer a mashed potato with a mashed parsnip or with a mashed cauliflower, but it's really not fair to the mashed cauliflower to ask people to see it as a substitute for their... If someone is in love with mashed potatoes since the age of 2, and you give them a mashed cauliflower, they'll have that same reaction as when you gave them the carob. So instead, I like to say, and I actually, my introduction to the mashed cauliflower in the book, and in the name of the recipe in the book, In the Heart of the Plate, is roasted garlic mashed cauliflower, because I have you roasting a bulb of garlic first. And my grandma Minnie used to tell people to fry an onion before they made their chocolate cake. Like her first step, were she to have used recipes, which she didn't, she just cooked very intuitively, but her first step in the verbal edition of her chocolate cake recipe was fry an onion. Why? Because your kitchen will then smell really inviting. And then make your chocolate cake. Well, with the roasted garlic mashed cauliflower, you get the garlic roasting first, and the kitchen goes into crazy, enticing smell mode, and you're in an altered state. Then you roast your cauliflower or cook your cauliflower and mash it. But my opening line for this recipe is just this one sentence. Seasoned and mashed on its own terms, cauliflower holds its ground and commands respect. And I was absolutely addressing anyone's temptation to substitute it for mashed potatoes without telling them, because that would be wrong.
No, don't do that.
That would be wrong,
it was delicious, and I shouldn't have said substitute, but it was a wonderful
dish. Oh, Joy, I wasn't criticizing you.
No, I know.
I mean, I'm probably one of the only people in the world whom, if you handed me mashed cauliflower instead of mashed potatoes, I'd actually be thrilled. But I suspect I'm in a minority.
Oh, I would be thrilled to have, because it was delicious, but it was a good way to use the cauliflower, and I didn't want mashed potatoes.
Well, another great thing to do with cauliflower is to roast it. If you're not a vegan and you love crusty cheese,
mm-hmm.
if you love, you know, the whole cauliflower and cheese made in heaven thing, it's one of my culinary little valentines. I draw on the wall a heart with cauliflower and cheese, and I roast cauliflower in the oven at a high temperature with chopped onion. And at the very end, coat it with cheese. And I like to do a fontina on there and get a good cheese crust going on it. Then it comes out of the oven, heartbreakingly wonderful, terrific on its own, but even better if folded, either folded into a risotto, a cauliflower cheese risotto, or folded into a mac and cheese. I flip mac and cheese in this book, and I flip lasagna towards the vegetable so that a vegetable with some lasagna, I'm sorry, a lasagna, I just gave it away, a lasagna with some vegetable in it might have been what you made before, but once you get this book, you're going to be making a lasagna out of layers of vegetables with occasional noodles. I flipped the ratio of noodles and vegetables, and I have, very often, I fold that roasted cauliflower cheese into a plain mac and cheese, turning it into a cauliflower mac and cheese.
Does that ever sound good? And we have some callers, so let me remind listeners, you can join us if you have a question for Molly Katzen, or if you maybe have your own favorite vegetarian recipe or vegetable that you like to use. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Molly Katzen is the author of many cookbooks. Her latest is The Heart of the Plate, Vegetarian Recipes for a New Generation. And we have an email from Nick, who writes, Molly's lentil walnut burgers rocked my world when I first became a vegan, and I'm patiently waiting for my nephew to grow up so I can teach him to cook with Molly's kids' cookbooks. Could Molly please share a recipe for artichoke hearts. I never know what to do with them other than putting them on pizza.
Oh, they're very good on pizza. I have an idea for artichoke hearts. You can put them in a gratin. In a gratin, by the way, don't run away, don't be scared. A gratin is simply a shallow casserole without all the paraphernalia in my earlier casserole. This is a cleaner version of spreading stuff out in a gratin pan, which is like an oval casserole. And so it's shallow so that it gets, you know, good heat distribution.
Okay.
And then you put something nice and crunchy on top. So you can saute some artichoke hearts. This is not an official recipe. It's just something to do with it. You know, I love recipes that are just kind of descriptions. Saute some artichoke hearts with some olive oil, of course, with onions and garlic. And you can add some cooked potatoes and spread it in a little pan, a gratin pan, and sprinkle it lightly with some whole wheat breadcrumbs, a little Parmesan cheese, and just broil it till you get a crispy top. If you want it to have a creamier backdrop, you could drizzle in a little milk or cream.
Oh.
If you want to keep the whole thing vegan, you can simply just heat them up in the gratin pan, and you can use soy milk instead of the milk or cream, and you can just use the breadcrumbs on top.
That sounds delicious. Let's take a call now from Marty in Douglas County. Hello, Marty.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Molly.
Morning, Marty.
A couple days ago, we picked all the apples off of our Zestar apple tree, and last night my husband made Variation 1 Waldorf Salad Moosewood Cookbook, and I just finished it for breakfast, so thank you very much.
I like that. I like that you had it for breakfast.
It's perfect. It has everything. It's got the blue cheese. It's got the walnuts, a little bit of everything in there. Here's my question. Someone who I trust who's a nutritionist, not just a mainstream nutritionist, but somebody who keeps up with everything going on, he says that it looks like dried beans are not quite the great source of protein that we always used to think they were. I'm wondering if you've seen any material related to that.
Did he say something further? Did he talk about the fact that they have a lot of carbohydrate in them?
Yeah, he said it looks like it's just mostly carbs and not the great, you know, great amount of protein that we always used them for.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, there's some truth in that. I mean, I have to always qualify by saying I'm not a nutrition researcher. I hang out with nutrition researchers so I can kind of pick their brains, but I'm not one of them. You know, this is a very personal thing, and some vegetarians who are the kind of vegetarian who are offended by meat will not like this answer, since I'm not that kind of vegetarian. But different people need different qualities and quantities of protein, and some people have a tendency to gain weight more easily than others, and as we get older, we have a greater tendency to gain weight because the efficiency of our metabolism slows down. We're not the lean metabolizing machines as we get older that we might have been when we were younger. And for those who are very strict vegetarians, and even strict vegans who need to get all their protein from beans and whole grains, there is protein in beans. There is protein in whole grains. But it's a collaborative situation, and along with that protein come other things, including carbohydrates, including fiber, which is, and beans are a tremendous source of fiber. So a bean is a kind of a protein, it's a protein package that has other things in it. I wouldn't say it's a pure protein package, but it's got protein plus the others. It's got vitamins, it's got, as I said, fiber and carbohydrates. So you're getting a little bit of protein, and you're getting the other things too. Same with whole grains. There's some protein in there, but there's also a lot of carbohydrate. And if they're whole grains, there's also some fiber, which is good. When I was younger and I was on a stricter vegetarian diet, not because I planned it, but just by default, I could, metabolically, I could get a lot of my protein, if not all of it, from those things, although I never gave up eggs or cheese. But personally, just for me, as I get older, the amount of protein I need to stay healthy and lean increases, and the amount of carbohydrate I can metabolize is less and less. So I turn to animal proteins, I turn to eggs, I turn to fish. I would if I tried to get all of my protein from beans and whole grains, I would be overweight because of all of, you get the protein, but you get a lot more that comes with it. just hard. It's just more to digest, more to metabolize. It all depends on your individual protein need, and that it varies from person to person, depending on your gender, your size, and your activity level. And it can even be different for the same person from one day to the next, again, depending on your activity level. So there's no one right amount of protein for everyone. And for a young, active, lean vegetarian, getting all the protein they need from whole grains and beans might be just perfect. But for an older person who's got, you know, more compromised metabolism, might not be. And things change and shift as you get older. So I always encourage people to keep checking in on their diet and make sure it's still working for them.
Interesting. I did add fish to my diet some years ago, in part because I felt I was lacking something. Plus, I was also reading about all the health benefits to the, you know, the fatty fishes.
Uh-huh.
So it's an evolving thing for me as well. But I did just make a killer batch of my veggie chili with a bunch of every type of bean I could think of in there. I call it sort of a kitchen sink veggie chili. it's one of the few things that people actually request I bring over to football games.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I love the kitchen sink cuisine. I've been there.
Yeah. Well, in fact, here Tim on Facebook asks, my wife and I always talk about becoming pescatarian, which is what I sometimes call myself. Mm-hmm. There is nothing better than homemade coleslaw and pan-fried fish with a side of squash. I guess I never had that, but
that's delicious.
Yeah, the only thing is we can't give up Wisconsin bacon. So we are wondering if Molly has any recipes with bacon, with vegetables being the heart of the dish.
I do not in this book. This book is purely vegetarian, although I think I might have had an option for a little bit of anchovy paste in the Caesar dressing. I have a kale Caesar, mm-hmm. one of my favorite dishes. But that's optional. But no, this is a purely vegetarian book. No bacon in this book except for the tofu bacon and the mushroom bacon. And forgive me, people who really, really love their bacon. I know there is no such thing as anything but the real thing. I have only one of my 12 books has meat in it. Well, two have meat. Only one has a little bacon. And that's the one that I wrote for my kids to use in their first kitchens because they wanted me to teach them how to cook what they already loved. I don't write my cookbooks for me. I write my cookbooks for others. So when people ask me for recipes, I'll give them a recipe for anything they want, really. But this book, The Heart of the Plate, my editor and I made a decision early on, this will be pure vegetarian food. And by the way, Joy, I really, when I use the word vegetarian, the way I'm most comfortable using it is when it describes the food and not so much the person.
Mm.
A plate of vegetarian food is something everybody can appreciate. And I don't want to be part of setting up these divisions among people where, well, over here's the carnivore, and over here's the vegetarian, and over here's the vegan, and nobody can sit down together, and nobody can talk to each other because they're kind of at odds. And there, you might have this lovely person who loves meat on Tuesday nights, but on Wednesday night might want a beautiful vegetarian plate of food. And you wonder if they're permitted because they're not official vegetarians. Like, am I allowed to eat that food too? I hear that often. It's for everybody. So describing the food as vegetarian rather than the person helps to kind of keep these divisions from taking over.
I like that distinction. And I also imagine that if our listener wanted to add a little bit of bacon to any of these recipes, it's not going to ruin them.
I think it's great. If you love bacon and you want, who doesn't? I mean, let's all be honest. Absolutely. Just try. You know what? It would be fine with me if you want to try, say, back to the idea of a gratin. I have a Brussels sprout gratin with potatoes and spinach. If that would be a great place. Here I am talking about my book and telling people where to add the bacon. This is funny. But you could crumble some in there, make it your own. It could be great. Do it. Try it. Let me know how it comes out.
We are talking with Molly Katzen. She is the author of many cookbooks, a dozen or so cookbooks. She is well known for bringing vegetarian cuisine into the mainstream back in the 1970s when she wrote Moosewood Cookbook, the classic Moosewood Cookbook. And now we are talking about her very latest book, The Heart of the Plate, Vegetarian Recipes for a New Generation. We welcome your questions for her. We welcome your examples of some of your favorite vegetarian cuisine. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Molly Katzen. She is the author of many cookbooks. Her latest is The Heart of the Plate, Vegetarian Recipes for a New Generation. 1-800-642-1234 if you'd like to talk about vegetarian cooking. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Susie in New Berlin next. Hello, Susie.
Hello. Hi. I heard you talking about mashed cauliflower before, and it reminded me of an old recipe that now I'm really hungry for, and I'm wondering if you've ever heard of it, because I lost the recipe. It was, let's see, cauliflower, chickpeas, beans, probably peas, I don't know, a couple more vegetables. And you steamed them all until they were soft and mashed them with some Indian spices. Indian, not Native American. And then, you had to dry it out enough that you could create a patty. And then you dipped it in egg and then dipped it in seasoned breadcrumbs and fried it. And then served it as a cutlet. And the recipe said that it was a variation. It was an Indian adaptation of a British cutlet that they would use during tea time. Mm. Have you ever heard of that? Or I mean, I'm sure you could make it.
Sounds great. What was the first ingredient? I remember you said the second ingredient was chickpeas, but what was the first one you said?
I think cauliflower.
That sounds fantastic. And, but you know,
yeah,
it's funny.
Were wonderful.
You know, it's funny that you brought this up because, first of all, yes, it sounds wonderful. Second of all, I don't know the name of it, but I'm going to look that up. It looks mm-hmm. great. But third of all, you brought up something that you gave me an idea of something I'd like to point out, which is that one of the things that differentiates how I used to cook from how I cook now is I would very often put all the ingredients together in one dish, sort of very similar to what you described, like many things into one thing and call it either a cutlet or a casserole. But almost every single ingredient you just listed, I have in a certain dish in my new book where I have a stew, a curried stew of cauliflower with chickpeas and carrots in it, and cashews. I think the chickpeas are optional. And it's beautiful because it's bright yellow from all the different curry spices. And then to go along with it, I make very simple pakora, which, you know, in pakora in Indian restaurants, it's one of those little tidbits of vegetables that are coated with a chickpea batter. Really, if you can find the chickpea flour, you just add water and make this lovely chickpea flour batter. Coat them and fry them until they're crisp and serve them alongside the stew. So I have, in fact, a recipe where it's not a cutlet. It is a curry with chickpeas and cauliflower and cashews and carrots with these onion pakoras. You make that chickpea flour batter, and put chunks of onion in it and just fry them up in hot oil. And it used to be that we would recoil from the idea of hot oil, we recoil from the idea of frying something. But the technique of frying can be such that if you get your pan very, very, very hot ahead of time, use the right kind of oil and make sure the oil is a certain temperature before something goes in. You can fry something in a very small amount of oil as long as it's very hot. And if it's very hot, the thing won't come out greasy. It'll just come out like fantastically crisp. So you can have fried foods with the wonderful crunchy mouthfeel that we remember from our childhood, stuff that was deep fried. There are techniques for getting this, and I have them in this book, and I have that particular technique with these onion pakoras with the chickpea flour. It's so much fun to make these, and it's so easy, and you'll feel so brilliant because everyone will think it wasn't easy. They'll think you're a genius. So that's another way to take those same ingredients and make them into something else. But all of that said, I'd love to find a recipe for that cutlet that you described. What do you serve it with?
Well, I think I used to just serve it with, this was back in the 70s.
Uh-huh.
And so everybody looked at me like I was out of my mind. But
I served them with
like cucumbers and probably sour cream rather than yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
And now I would use yogurt and baba ganoush maybe and things like that on the side.
Uh-huh.
We just use them kind of as a side dish, and you know, along with other things. It was just a side dish. Not that it was not that it was like the only thing on the plate, kind of thing. So.
But it could have been the heart of the plate, couldn't it, Molly?
Yeah, it could well have been, especially once you get the chickpeas in there. Back to a couple of calls ago, is there enough protein in beans? Is there enough protein in chickpeas? Maybe not freestanding, but once you've done these combinations and juxtapositions of here's the chickpeas and over here are the cashews, and you're serving it hopefully on a brown basmati rice, which is so delicious, and that each one of them brings a little bit more protein, so it becomes this cumulative effect of protein. And by the time you've done it, made a yogurt sauce for the top of it, you've got plenty of protein in that dinner.
Susie, thank you for the call. Laura emails, I've been a vegan for 3 years, and I still cannot figure out what to do with tofu. Do you have any recommendations other than what I wind up doing, which is frying it and throwing barbecue sauce on it?
That is what gets done a lot with tofu. I like to marinate tofu. You could just marinate it in any vinaigrette, any kind of Italian-style salad dressing. I have a lot of vinaigrette recipes in the back of the book because I think vinaigrettes are the key to so much about cooking vegetables, and they're very easy to make. So one of the things I do with tofu is before I do anything with it, I boil it.
Hmm.
For about 10 minutes, it can be in the whole, you know, the whole brick, or it can be cut into pieces the size of whatever piece you want to get to. I take it back. I don't mean boil. I mean simmer in gently bubbling water so it doesn't break for maybe 10 minutes, and then drain it. What that does is it pulls together the proteins, it coagulates the proteins further, and it helps to push out some of the water. So you get a denser, chewier, kind of sturdier tofu after you boil it a bit and then drain it. And then it's readier for some hot oil, or it's readier to be marinated because it sort of is the equivalent of pressing it. I don't know if you've ever put a weight on tofu.
Yes,
it's kind of an inconvenience, a kind of clumsy setup. It's much easier to just boil it. It's the exact same effect. And so then you've condensed the tofu, gotten some of the water pushed out, and then it's more of a sponge for the marinade. Then take that drained tofu and put it in the shallow dish. Put your favorite vinaigrette all over it. Leave it for a few hours. It can actually marinate at room temperature if it's not too hot in your kitchen. And you have just transformed that tofu into a little flavor soldier. And it can be grilled, depending on the size of the piece, carefully in a grill basket or in a grill pan on your stove. And it can be go in a salad. It's a wonderful thing to put as a topping on cooked grains or to toss into some vegetables. But it's a highly infused tofu.
I love that. I'm going to try that for sure. Nadine emails, my biggest difficulty that I find with vegetarian cooking is the preparation. With my busy schedule, chopping and slicing for a family after I get home from work is a lot of work. I don't want to steam or use canned veggies because they are so inferior. Do you have any ideas for quick or at least in advance prep without the vegetables turning brown or going bad?
I do. I have just the thing. It's called blanching, and it is the solution to several things. It's the solution to the busy weeknight when you have no time,
mm-hmm.
and it's also the solution to what I call the vegetable volume challenge because vegetables are huge very often before they're cooked. They take up half your refrigerator. You know, for a family of four, that, you know, the five a day, just it'll push you out of your entire house, you know. So the thing you do is when you get home from the produce market, get a pan of water simmering, and you don't even have to cut the vegetables very small. It can be in big pieces. Chard and kale can be in whole leaves. Green beans can be whole. Broccoli can be in big stalks. Brussels sprouts can be whole. Get those vegetables into that simmering water. for even seconds, 10 seconds, 20 seconds, up to a minute, depending on the vegetable, depending on your taste. Get them partially cooked in the water. Drain them thoroughly. Squeeze out all the water. You have now partially cooked them, and you have, by doing so, you have more than doubled their shelf life, the refrigerator shelf life, and you have cut by more than half the amount of space they're going to take up in your refrigerator. And the most brilliant thing you've just done is you've created, and if you've done this on a Sunday, you have created an instant vegetable for Tuesday or Wednesday, because now all that partially cooked vegetable needs is a quick swim through some beautifully, you know, garlic-spiked olive oil in a pan on the stove and some salt and pepper, and then it's ready to go. So you've done the pre-cooking. All it needs is the finishing. And you just put these in Ziploc bags in your refrigerator, pull them out as needed. In Italy, they actually sell pre-blanched vegetables this way. Just the thing in the store says take it home and heat it up in some olive oil, of course. So try the blanching. It takes a little bit of extra time on that day when you get home from the market. But just embrace it, set up a colander by the stove on a plate, get your tongs out, put on some music, get all your vegetables blanched, and they will all fit in your refrigerator, and they will all be a less than 5-minute project between there and your dinner table.
Excellent. Katie in Burlington is with us now. Hi, Katie.
Hi. Just along the same line, your Moosewood cookbook, I'm not a big cooker, I'm terrible at it, but I'll tell you there are three recipes that I just love. My book just opens right to them. It's your pesto is fantastic. Kids will even eat it. The quiche is wonderful. And my favorite one is your vegetarian chili. I do love tofu, but this one doesn't have any soy. It's so easy to make. It's a comfort food to me. So I just want to thank you for that recipe. I've been probably using it since like the 70s.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And I think I stole the recipe book from my mom. I should probably buy her another copy. It's probably been a few years I've had it.
Has she noticed yet?
I don't think she... Maybe I did bring it up to her because I felt guilty, and I think maybe she had bought another one.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember now. I'll probably have to check again. But I took it from her when I left for college, I think.
That's so funny.
I've
heard so many stories about people stealing each other's cookbooks and, you know, having them up for grabs and divorces and things like that. So I just say, well, I hope you got another one.
Katie, thank you so much for the call. And Molly, we have just a minute left. So what would you like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I love what Katie just said about how she's not really a cook, but she got three recipes that she really made be her own recipes. For people who think you're not cooks, just find one simple recipe and bond with it and get comfortable with it. And once you make that one recipe, you are no longer a non-cook. You are a cook. One recipe is all it takes.
Thank you so much. I learned a lot, and I'm looking forward to making dinner tonight. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Joy. Take care.
Molly Katzen is the author of The Heart of the Plate, Vegetarian Recipes for a New Generation. You may be familiar with Molly's first cookbook, or one of her first cookbooks, The Moosewood Cookbook, which introduced the mainstream to vegetarian cuisine back in the 1970s. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thanks to Bill Martins for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.